Today's podcast is brought to you by the Eden Pure Gen 40 Heater. The Gen 40 heaters are back in stock. With skyrocketing heating bills, they sold out and will go fast again. If you missed the last special, order fast and now at EdenPureDeals.com. For this week or until they run out, you can get the stylish and strong Eden Pure Gen 40 heater with code HOWIE50.
Strap yourself in. It's time for the Howie Carr Show.
I said at the top of this forum about closing deals, and we've delivered. So just give me a few, highlights from the deal room to the benefits they will deliver to Africa.
Damn it! Who typed a question mark on the teleprompter? For the last time, anything you put on that prompter, he will read.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
And, Madam Speaker, I have to say, my girls told me, tell this speaker...
Are you crying?
How much we admire her.
You can act like a man! What's the matter with you?
Will you commit to serving your full two-year term for the people of San Francisco?
What is this? Don't bother me with a question like that.
Do you know who I am?
Yeah. I don't... Those kind of questions are such a waste of my time. No, I'm a...
How dare you! How dare you!
Rump swabs, hacks, and moon bats beware. It's Howie Carr.
844-500-4242, 844-500-4242. We talked last night about the Fells Acre Daycare Center story, which has been in the news for almost 40 years now. And it involves the prosecution and the imprisonment of a group of people from a single family, a mother and her daughter and her son, for allegedly, molesting young children to ages 2 to 5, I think, basically. And the mother and the daughter and the son were imprisoned for a number of years. The son, Gerald Tookie Amaralt, was imprisoned for 18 years. And there were a number of questions about the veracity of these charges and the overzealousness of the prosecutors, who were politically ambitious. And it's been a major story in Massachusetts for again almost 40 years. And Barbara Anderson, the late Barbara Anderson, who was one of the people who got Charlie Baker elected governor in 2014, she was dying in 2016, and she said, "All my dying wish is that Charlie Baker pardon the sentence of Cheryl, the daughter, and Gerald, the son, because the mother was deceased by then." And Charlie Baker just dragged his feet here until the last minute of his administration. And then he finally put in a pardon request, but he didn't back it up, and he didn't lobby the members of the governor's council. And there was a contentious hearing on Tuesday, and it became clear that he didn't have the four votes. There's eight people in the governor's council. He had three votes. He needed one more vote. And if it was 4-4, Karen Polito, the lieutenant governor, would have broken it, and Gerald and Cheryl Amaralt would have gotten their pardons. And they still would have been, found guilty, but they would have been pardoned. I mean, it was just kind of like clearing the deck, but it wasn't like exonerating them. But the hearing just went totally off the rails. And again, I blame the governor to a large degree for just not doing his homework. They owed him a lot, the governor's council. He appointed one of them today to a clerkship, by the way. A 76-year-old guy got a lifetime job. He could have handed out some. He hands out trinkets for everything else. He could have done this as a favor to someone who had helped him get elected. That's what politics is all about, especially when you're on your way out the door. Anyway, it didn't happen, and it's really a shame. I've known Gerald Amaralt for a long time. I think I was introduced to him by Barbara Anderson, as a matter of fact, and I just wanted to have him on the show to discuss what happened and just to react to all that he's gone through. We've had him on the show before when he got out, but I don't think a lot of people still understand what he and his family went through, and they stuck together. a couple of my listeners, after we talked about it last night, said, you know, this would destroy most families, but they're still together. You know, he still has his wife and his kids and his grandkids, and they're all still a family in spite of this terrible thing that's happened to them, being convicted and sent to prison. So he's joining us. I think we're going to spend the hour with him and just have him. I'm going to ask a few questions here and there, but I'm going to let Gerald Amaral just talk about what this has all been about for him. And I think it's a lesson about how justice can go astray. And I don't know what happened. And, you know, no one who wasn't there knows what really happened. But I tend to think that the Amarals did not do anything to these kids. And I think most people who study the case agree. I want to introduce him now, though, Gerald Amaral. Thanks for being with us here on the Howie Carr Show.
Well, thanks for having me, Howie.
So I guess the first question is, what was it? You thought you were going to get the pardon, didn't you? I mean, what was it? Well, what was it like listening to what happened?
Yeah, we felt comfortable that we had, you know, a few votes. You know, we don't know for sure if we had three votes, but we know we had a few, and we only needed four. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Quickly, the hearing was so disjointed and just turned into a bleep show. It was run so unprofessional. There's no controls in there. Anyone could say whatever they want, and people just went off the rail. It was unbelievable.
And so, tell us, you spent, how many years did you spend in prison?
17 years, 10 months.
And since then, what have you had? You're still on parole, technically, right?
I've been on parole. I've been out since 2004, so I'm going to finish my 19th year. I've been on an ankle bracelet for 17 years. They put me on the ankle bracelet illegally 2 years after I was released from prison. Charged me $400 a month to be supervised in parole and monitored by the bracelet for 9 years, and then miraculously, they stopped charging people after like 10 years because someone probably challenged it. You never know. There's always lawsuits being filed by inmates. You never know. I don't even know the reason. No one gave us a reason. They just said, you don't have to pay it anymore. But if you didn't pay it when you were on the monitoring system, they would tell you couldn't travel anywhere until you make your payment. And that's the way it was.
Where did you serve your time? Where did you serve your time?
I had a bunch of different prisons. I started in the Billerica House of Correction. I was there for 8.5 years. Then when they threw the state inmates could no longer serve time in houses of correction. I think they kind of put me there to kind of protect me because they PC'd me for most of my bid until I got
protective custody.
Everyone realized that my case was bogus. So I was getting letters from inmates saying, get out of PC. You don't need to be in PC. Because inmates understand more than anyone how you can get railroaded, you know what
right.
I mean? So they would tell, and they know what PC is like, you know what I mean? You're with the worst of the worst, and you are restricted in terms of what you can do in terms of working out, you know, availability to things that, normal inmates would have, so to speak, you know? So I was there for 8.5 years, then they threw us out of there. I went to Plymouth House of Correction, where I spent in the PC unit there for almost 5 years. And then finally, I was able to go to Bay State Correctional, which was fabulous, I mean, for prison. I mean, you know, if you're going to have to do the time, you want to do it in a place like that where the food was good, the visits were great. I earned my bachelor's degree from Boston University. We had professors come in. It was really good. You know, it made a difference.
But you spent 17 years for something you say you didn't do. Tell us how the whole thing started.
It started, I changed the child's pants. And it changed my life forever. That's what it did. A little boy peed his pants in my school. I changed him because he was on my school bus run. And when I called down one day to get my kids for my school bus run, because there was kids in all different classrooms, because we had teachers in every classroom. There's 5 classrooms, teachers for every different age level. This one day, this little boy had peed his pants because he took a nap and he wasn't a napper. And this one day he fell asleep and had an accident. No big deal. I'm in a daycare center. This is 1984. Send him up. I'll take care of him. We had extra clothes, changed them, wiped them off, thought nothing of it. Bagged his dirty clothes up, and we sent him I drove him home. He was my first drop-off that day. Dropped him off at his house right in Medford. Told his mother what happened. I said, you can send back the old our clothes later. Thought nothing of it. The whole summer goes by, Howie. This little boy had only been in my school 2 days a week for 3.5 months prior to the summer of 84. He came to our graduation at the end of that school year in 84, just before the summer. And he wasn't going to go to the camp, but he wanted us to retain a position for him in September. So he said, no problem. And we find this out through discovery after the kid makes an allegation. You know how discovery goes.
Right, right.
The little boy was supposedly having behavioral symptoms during the course of the summer. He was wetting the bed. He was having nightmares. And I guess he had some sort of sexualized behavior with his little cousin on the porch or something. And his uncle, the mother's brother, had been molested at a camp when he was a little boy. So I think they were kind of predisposed for that kind of thoughts and those kinds of things. So he took the boy one day for a walk to get to the store, and the mother said, you know, ask him if anything ever happened to him at the school. So, you know, because they, like I said, they were predisposed. So she, you know, the uncle says, did anyone ever, you know, touch you anywhere at the school? And all he was telling the guy, he's telling his uncle is, yeah, this man took you at school, you know, he touched me around my private area. All he was really telling them is what happened when he wet himself.
Right.
This guy runs home, tells the mother. She calls the hotline. My mother gets a phone call because it was the weekend before Labor Day. My mother gets a call, I believe it was either on Saturday or Sunday, from the child abuse hotline. And she, you know, after she was done, they said that they've got a complaint that a tookie at the school had fondled, I think was the word they used in the beginning. And so my mother called me. And immediately, I jogged my memory and remembered when Michael wet himself. So I thought nothing of it. I said, Mom, I remember. He wet himself. No big deal. Tuesday morning, my school was closed on Monday. Tuesday morning, John Rivers and John Byrne from the Malmö Police Department, two detectives, show up at my school, and they come into my mother's office. And I was sitting there with my mom. We were doing some banking. And they wanted lists of all the kids in the school. So, Howie, they were looking to make this bigger before they even looked into the first complaint. My mother was a smart woman. She grew this business from a little taking care of a few kids in the basement of our house because my dad she divorced my father. He was an alcoholic, and started this business and grew it into a business. We had 65 kids in our school. We had waiting lists. We were just getting ready to buy more properties.
I got a break right here, but we'll pick up the story when we come back.
People need, yeah, okay.
No, we got plenty of time. We got the whole hour to talk about this, and I want to talk about that hearing too and what happened at the hearing. Thank you. We'll be right back with Gerald Emerald in just a moment. My friends at Eden Pure have big news. The Gen 40 heaters are back in stock. With skyrocketing heating bills, they sold out and will go fast again. If you missed the last special, order fast and now at EdenPureDeals.com. For this week or until they run out, you can get the stylish and strong Eden Pure Gen 40 heater with $50 off with code Howie50. The Gen 4 heater combines infrared and convective heat to warm a room, and it warms you to the bones. The heater is completely safe around kids and pets with no exposed elements. Not only do I love the Gen 40 heater, but my listeners do too. One wrote, I use this heater to heat my garage while working on my car. It did a great job heating my garage at a comfortable range. Another excellent product by Eden Pure, unquote. Right now, you can save $50 with code Howie50 at EdenPureDeals.com. Last year, Eden Pure sold out of their Gen 40 heaters, so you need to order early while supplies last. Go to EdenPureDeals.com and put in code Howie50. Save today and be prepared for the cold temps. You know they're coming. That's EdenPureDeals.com, code word Howie50. Shipping is free. I'm Howie Carr.
He's the undisputed king of New England Talk Radio.
It's good to be the king.
Howie Carr. If you're looking for a woke male role model, well, you've got the wrong guy.
You can act like a man! What's the matter with you?
The Howie Carr Show is back.
Today's poll question is brought to you by the Nauset Beach Inn. Plan your winter getaway now at the Nauset Beach Inn. Ocean View rooms are priced from just $119.99 during the week and $149.99 a night on weekends through March. Book online at NausetBeachInn.com. Taylor, what's the poll question? What are the results thus far?
Does Charlie Baker deserve a $3 million a year job as NCAA president after his performance as governor of Massachusetts?
No.
86% say no.
Oh, it went down a little bit. By the way, the guy, the member of the governor's council who got the clerkship is Bob Jubenville, my counselor. I like the guy, but he's 76, and he gets a job for life, paying $175,000 a year, and again, no mandatory retirement. He gets it for life, and he was on the Amaral side, by the way. Yesterday, so let's pick it up with Gerald Amaralt again. And the Malden detectives had come in and they demanded the list of all the children who were there. How old were the children, by the way? How old? What was the age range?
The kids in 84 when this first started, they were probably 2.5 to 5. So, like I was saying, and this just puts it into perspective. It's too complicated to say the whole thing, but. They show up at my school. My mother is very a proud person, and she could see when they were asking for lists of all the kids. So immediately, my mother's like, "You gonna try to bring this poison to Massachusetts?" So I said to my mom, "Listen, Mom, we have nothing to hide," because I was naive. I said, "Give them whatever they want." The next day, I was arrested for rape of a child. Not a single question asked of anyone in my school. Every teacher in my school, you know, there was a teacher in every single classroom. I didn't even work with the kids.
So you were the bus driver, right?
I drove the school bus. I banked with my mom. I shopped for the school, you know, because my mother, we fed the kids lunch, you know, breakfast. Yeah. You know, and no one ever asked a question of any of us. You know what I mean? They didn't even do an investigation. I don't know how they could have gotten away with it, but they did. And then the case took on a life of its own with the media. I mean, it was like, you know, naked swimming parties, pornography rings, clowns, mutilated animals, which was never in evidence, but they were allowed to say that because your lawyers tell you to be quiet. Don't talk to anybody. So they were feeding them all this crap. And then they had a police meeting at the Malden police station within 10 days. Now, I had family members that had children in my school, so they were allowed to be at this meeting. And they told the parents, they empowered the parents. They said, listen, if your kid's wetting the bed, having, you know, nightmares, if he cries when he goes to school, he's probably been a molestation victim. And they told them to go home and ask repeatedly about a magic room, a secret room, and a clown. So now they give them the common theme of the case and tell the parents to go home and ask their own kids. This is things that investigators didn't even know how to do back then, to question kids properly. And we
right,
all
and,
know
and even the people, who say, "Well, they didn't commit any malicious harm," the prosecutors and the cops, they're saying, "Well, we would never do such a thing today." But you know, I mean,
exactly.
So they've seen their they've recognized their mistakes, Howie. but your lives are destroyed.
Right. Exactly, Howie. And Felsakis, McMartin, Little Rascals, We Care, they all. Those four or five cases that happened from 85 to like 89, they changed the way district attorneys deal with these cases. They have to have forensic psychologists, child sexual assault units, where people are trained professionals. They don't have to bribe the kid with police badges and candy and promises of going places to get them to say what they want. And if you read this stuff, you would throw up. You really would. You'd throw up.
Yeah, it says the children ages 2 to 5 who accused Amaralt and Lefebvre in the 1980s, at the time, the Globe, when they investigated this and reviewed the videotapes and transcript, many instances of the children denying abuse only to have the interviewer plead and cajole, at times offering gifts for the correct answer.
Unbelievable. You know, I've got 7 grandkids. I have, you know, kids were our life. My mother dedicated her life to taking care of children. She was a pioneer. She had after-school programs before anyone else did because she was a single mom, and she had to go and toe the line.
We got another half hour with Gerald Amaral. We're gonna we'll get back to the story when we come back. And if you want to call, give us a call, 844-500-4242. I'm Howie Carr.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
We're talking with Gerald Amaral. He spent 17 years and 10 months in prison for a crime that I don't believe he committed. And his sister and his mother also spent time in prison. How long did your mother spend in prison, Gerald?
They both spent like 8 years, right around 7.5. Yeah, they got parole.
And your mother's dead. She died.
She died 3 years after she was released. You know, you don't get a lot of good medical care in prison, so I don't know if it might have been able to prevent it if she had better care from the outside, you know, but who knows? She had stomach cancer.
Who do you blame for what happened to you? Which prosecutors? Who do you blame?
First of all, right, the investigators didn't do their job, okay? And the parents and the kids that got involved, they got involved because the so-called investigators told them, if your kid's wet in the bed, if he's, you know, crying when he goes to school, if he's having nightmares, these are 2 to 5 year old kids. You're going to get like 20 or 30 kids out of the 75 kids we had at our school that are having these kind of symptoms. And you believe that these investigators, first of all, I've already been arrested. So, you know, most people assume there must have been an investigation, so why would they arrest this guy? So they give validity to that, and then they start telling them this stuff because, you know, as a parent, you entrust the people that they know what they're doing, and they didn't.
Well, who told the cops to arrest you, though? I mean, I don't think the cops would. This is a pretty serious charge. This isn't like disorderly conduct. I mean, they must have had an okay from the district attorney, didn't they?
It was pretty early on, Howie. I don't even know if the district attorney was involved yet. It was you're talking like 2 days after the hotline phone call. I was arrested. The hotline phone call was either a Saturday or Sunday, the weekend of Labor Day, 84. I was arrested on Wednesday. The school was closed on Monday. So, I mean, I don't even know if they could have done anything with the DA. I don't quote me on that, but I think it was just strictly a police thing. You know, these two detectives. John Rivers, I'll never forget, John Rivers was talking to John Stossel in 2020. They did a really good piece of my case. And he asked him, John Stossel asked him, like, when the kids were, like, you know, not giving you the answers you wanted, why did you keep he said, you know, this is Rivers, the detective. He said, you know, getting these kids to say what we wanted them to say was like trying to get blood out of a rock.
Oh, my God. He said that?
Yeah. You can go watch the piece.
I think in a courtroom they call that leading the witness sometimes, right? I mean, that wouldn't be allowed in a courtroom.
Right. This wasn't on the stand, Howie. This was on the program 2020 when they did a piece of my case. Mm-hmm. But that's what he said. That's what we were dealing with. Never mind the leading of the witnesses in my trial.
Now they're calling it suggestive questioning. Suggestive questioning. That's what they say in the story.
Exactly.
So did you ever get out of jail again, or did you get to make bail or anything like that?
No, I made bail. I had a five.
But you were threatened. You were threatened, though, right? After you left, after you got out of the jail.
No, I mean my house got shot at. Yeah, they put some bullets through my house. Two of them went right over my son. He was maybe a year old, not even. He was months old, and went right over the top of his crib on the Hawthorne Street side of my house. And we knew who did it. You know, it was one of the parents. The father was a complete nutcase drug addict, and he's dead now. But he shot my house up, and you know, we all knew who it was, but no one did anything. You know what I mean? I had a police. Then they had the police out here every night, you know, guarding my house, like, for the rest until I went to trial. It was a nightmare.
I mean, how did you deal with being in prison for 17 years? I mean, you know, honestly, you talk like a con, you know, because you spent all those years in prison. Of course, you talk that way. But I mean, what was it like?
Listen, one thing I did control, you know, I had no control over how this case came about. You know what I mean? The way the media did it, whatever the investigators, so-called, were trying to do. I had no control over that. My trial, all of that, had no control. The day I was convicted, that's when I took control, okay? And I'll be damned if I'm going to let a wrongful conviction ruin my life. So if you were ever to meet my family and my children, they'll tell you that I was a better father from prison than some people are from the street. Because I took it very seriously. I made sure I was a part of everything that they did. We talked a lot on the phone. They visited me. And I didn't let it, because that you know, one thing you don't want to have happen is if they can beat you in the courtroom, but they can't beat you inside yourself if you're strong. You know what I mean? And something like this, I had so much support. My family was wonderful. My wife's parents, my wife's mom and dad, they were salt of the earth people. My father-in-law was a World War II vet in Burma, and he helped my wife out immensely to get through and maintain her career. I mean, this could have destroyed us as a family.
Could have? I mean, it would have destroyed most people, I think,
yeah,
most families.
It could have, Howie, but we weren't going to let it happen. And if you were to meet my kids and stuff and see what type of people they are, you'd be really impressed.
How many kids you got?
I have three and seven grandkids, and I love every one of them. They're my whole world. I have them from 4 years old up to 16.
And you're 68 years old now, and
yep.
So do you still work, or are you retired?
No, I never had a job. How could I get a job, Howie? I couldn't. Who's going to hire Tookie Emerald, the level 3 sex offender? It was impossible. So what I do is I paint for people that I know. You know, I do a little interior painting, and I do all right for myself, and we get by. You know what I mean? Money, you know, when I think of what we lost, Howie, it's like, it's mind-boggling. You know what I mean? My mother had us set up for the rest of our lives. My wife and I, at the time we were accused and this started, we were looking at a second property to open up a second school. My wife probably would have never went into public school teaching because she would have become a director of one of the new schools, you know? So, you know, our life changed, you know, and what do you do, Howie? We had no control over that, you know?
Can you drive? Can you drive? I mean, like, can you do, like, driving work?
No, you can't do anything. You do a dash. They do a background check on you. Everyone gets background checks now. I probably come up looking like Hitler. You know what I mean?
And you lost all those years for paying into Social Security, so you can't get much Social Security, right?
I haven't worked in 40 years. Right? I get like $500 a month.
And you know, I mean, those guys that the FBI framed in the North End, I mean, they were in for 35 years. Peter Lamoni, did you discuss the situation with Peter Lamoni?
Oh, Peter knows. I painted for his son, Paulie.
But I mean, what did you discuss? I mean, you know, he says, did you say, well, we both got framed? I mean, what kind of conversations were there?
I never had a personal conversation, but his son told me that he knew I got framed. You know what I mean? Because he was part of. Look at what happened to those guys.
Yeah.
I mean, they. You had Peter Lamoni, Joe Salvati, Louis Greco, that whole crew.
Louis Greco was in Florida the night of the murder, and the FBI framed him, and they laughed about it. They laughed about it to Frankie Salemi afterwards.
Yeah, that's what they do. You know what I mean? Sometimes that's what they do, Howie. And most people don't understand. You know who understands more than anything is inmates and people that have been part of the system. They understand that if you got caught, you get caught up in the wrong type of situation, you're done. Mm-hmm. There's no getting around it.
But you can never get back the years that are gone. But at least those guys, the North End guys, Lamoni and Salvati and Greco, they all got like 25, 30 million bucks. I mean, you can't get any money, can you? You can't get any reparations, right?
No. It's very difficult to prove malicious intent or whatever. They make it so hard, Howie. Even the process. I was granted a commutation by Salucci, okay? And then he went off to become ambassador, and Swift took over, and she punted. I would have guarded it. I would have been out in 2002 if he stayed in. But he went on to become an ambassador. And I got a unanimous vote from them. Then I got a unanimous vote for parole, first time out, 5-0 by a very, you know, John Kivlin, that whole group. They were a very hard-ass conservatives, but they understood. And in my decision, on my parole decision, they wrote, there is serious questions about the validity of this conviction, which is unheard of if you know anything about decisions by parole boards.
And so people want to know who on the governor's council was on your side. So Terry Kennedy was on your side, right?
Terry Kennedy was on our side. And
he's your governor's counselor. Yeah. Okay. Who else?
Yeah, he is. He does our area. Jubenville.
Yeah, he's my counselor.
We,
yeah.
We heard, you know, there was maybe one other one that was probably could have been a positive, and I needed one after that, you know. But you don't know. You don't know what, you know, you don't know what they're going to do. You know what I mean? It's just they asked me to pull the pardon, and I said, no, I want these people to vote. I want them to be attached to a yes or a no vote so that they have to answer to their constituents. Because I believe that most of Massachusetts knows that this case is the biggest travesty of justice in the history of Massachusetts, what they did to all of us involved in this case. They ruined people's lives. Kids, parents, my family, you know, they changed everyone's lives forever. And they will never admit that they made a mistake like this because it's too big. But the one thing that will happen, Howie, it'll never go away because the truth is in the pudding.
What do you want to happen next? Is there anything that can happen now?
I don't know. I mean, all I want to do is keep this thing alive. I told my mother when she was dying that I will fight this till the day I die. And eventually, Howie, when you do something this wrong to this many people, it comes back to bite you in the ass. And it will.
But who's it going to bite in the ass, though?
Well, if it gets exposed the proper way, these people are going to have to live with it. You know what I mean? They're going to have to live with the way they questioned those children and made them believe things that weren't true and put my whole family in prison, took our business away that my mother worked her whole life for. You know what I mean? You have a mother. Everyone has a mother.
Yeah.
Can you imagine what is going to motivate? Listen, just to put it simply, what is going to motivate a mother, a brother, and a sister to all become child molesters at the same time?
No, it's unheard of. It's unheard of. And you had no priors. None of you had any priors.
Unbelievable. It's so nonsensical, Howie. You know what I mean? They can say whatever they want. The facts are the facts. There's no getting around it. They know what they did. They'll never admit it. And that's just, they're going to have to live with it. They're going to have to live with what they did to our family and everyone involved in this case.
All right. We're going to come back for one more segment with Gerald Amaralt, but I got to take a break right now. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Dr. Houghton of Perfect Smiles is a superb dental architect. When it comes to dentistry, he's the best at what he does. He fixes your teeth, your smile, but what he really does is build the self-confidence of his patients. When you have a smile that you are proud of, it builds confidence in your professional life and your personal life. The better you look, the better you feel, and that helps every aspect of your life, every interaction you have daily. If you're not afraid to smile, every other part of life becomes so much easier. I've said it before, but it bears repeating, I think. You only have one chance to make a good first impression, and that is your smile. If you've been procrastinating about going back to the dental office for 2.5, 3 years, almost 3 years now, don't postpone going back any longer. Whether you just need a simple checkup or a teeth cleaning or something more serious to get your mouth back in good condition, it's the longer you wait, the more of a headache and a hassle it's going to be. Call up or go to PerfectSmiles.com in Nashua, New Hampshire, the best dental office I've ever been to, and I think you will agree once you go there. Not just Dr. Houghton, but his dental hygienist. Everybody at the office is top-notch. 2023 will be here before you know it. You have the opportunity to go into the new year with more confidence than ever before. Have you thought about Perfect Smiles for years but never called? Take care of yourself. You deserve it. Call Perfect Smiles in Nashua, New Hampshire. They're the best, and I go there whenever I'm in New England. They are conveniently located off Route 3, and they have plenty of parking. If you can reach them at perfectsmiles.com. You won't regret it. That's perfectsmiles.com. Change your smile, change your life. I'm Howie Carr.
Did you miss part of today's show?
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Just search Howie Carr on your favorite podcast app and listen anywhere, anytime. Send your police blotter facts Friday stories to Grace at HowieCarshow.com. You might win a special prize.
It's a one-year membership in the Jelly of the Month Club.
Clark, that's the gift that keeps on giving the whole year.
The Howie Carr Show is back.
...844-500-4242. We have a few more minutes with Gerald Tookie Amaralt, who spent 17 years, 10 months in prison, is still on parole, still wearing an ankle bracelet after all these years. And I don't know. I think he didn't do it. I don't think anybody in the family did. I think they were railroaded. It's happened before in Massachusetts. It's happened everywhere, actually, in times of hysteria and panic, as the one of the judges said. We'll take a call or two if we have time, Gerald. But I want to ask you, how do you feel about Marilyn Devaney was the one who really ginned it up, the governor's counselor who really got everybody all excited here, and you know, her counselors. I've always liked her over the years. She's kind of crazy, but. I think she really did you a disservice yesterday or two days ago.
Go ahead. She got up in the middle of the hearing and said that she was the friend of she was the friend of the mother of one of the victims, and that her vote, she already knew what she was going to do. And she basically, after anyone was talking, she would throw stuff out there that was totally out of control. There was no checks and balances. She was throwing information out there that was never in the case. She was a total, I've never seen anyone so more unprofessional than this woman. And one of our, a lawyer friend of mine, John Swarmley, who is in her district, approached her after the hearing and said, I didn't realize that you were my counselor, but I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure you're never reelected again. You are a disgrace. She was out of control, Howard.
Well, I think this was her last term. She was barely reelected this time around, and I think she knows she's on her way out. But
it was unbelievable, so unprofessional. It was disgraceful.
Do you want to take a call or two before we go?
Sure. Yeah.
Jack, you're next with Howie Carr and Gerald Tookie Amaralt. Go ahead, Jack.
Hi, Howie, and hi, Tookie. I just want to chime in. I've never called anyone before, but I knew Tookie back in the early 80s. He worked for me part-time. Okay, I got to know him pretty good. And then I had to move out of state for a few years while he went through that horrendous trial. But I can tell you this. He is the epitome of a family man. Everything he did, including working for me part-time, was for his family. He's just an amazing guy. And I want people should know that. You know, and I would hire you, Tookie, again.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Can anyone do anything for you to help you out, or can they approach you for work or anything like that? What can anybody do to help you out?
Well, Howie, I had a job all set up that John Knebel owns H.P. Hood. When I was granted my parole, you know, it takes about a month to get out, he had sent his human resources guy there for me to get a job. But I think what happened, and I was ready to get a job as soon as I left, and at H.P. Hood, I guess, and he, I think what happened was they do a lot of stuff with, like, Jimmy Fund and, you know,
right,
children's things. Someone probably said to him, I don't know if this is a good idea, you know, the guy's, you know, convicted, you know, so it never came to be.
They got scared off. I really appreciate you being with us, Gerald Amaralt, to help things out. I'll call you in the morning, okay, and we'll talk some more about what's going on. I'm sorry this happened to you, though. I apologize on behalf of the governor's council.